From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. This week, I am so excited to get to hang out with the kitchen shrink, also known as cookbook author and leftovers lover, Tamar Adler. Tamar, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy.
Okay, so we set up this idea several weeks ago, and we invited Nerdette listeners to call or write in with their kitchen quandaries. And the way you set up this idea was essentially like you are game to address any like cooking or eating related questions that people may have.
Yes.
And we got a really delightful abundance of them. I'm really excited to go through some of them with you. Let's get into it. Our first question is from Catherine on Instagram. And I think this is one that you've talked about in your books before, but Catherine wanted to know what the best way is to store extra fresh herbs that you have already chopped. What do you think?
This is a question that I love so much because I face it all the time. All the time. I have a, I'm curious about whether you do this too, Greta, that, and I feel like maybe Catherine does it, that we're like, I have a very hard time including the very end of something that I've prepped in what I'm making. Like,
yes.
And it turns out that other, like, this is a common thing. There's probably a name for it, like So I'll like make, you know, I'm making lentils and then I make duck and I'm going to put the duck legs in the lentils just to roast for the last little bit.
God,
I will somehow,
gorgeous.
Yeah, delicious. But like, I will keep half a cup or a cup of lentils out instead of just pouring them in, like
in case of what,
like, like chopped parsley, right?
Just yes,
you just put it all, you chopped it all, but I need the exact amount.
I think it is the just in case, but you're totally right, it's not real. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Or maybe it's like a slight, I don't know what it is, it's a slight anxiety.
Yes.
But it leaves me like Catherine with leftover chopped herbs because I will never use all of it. There's always just a little bit left over. So, you know, if you can commit to, if it's either a small amount, then you can just put it in a very small, ideally glass, transparent, airtight container, like a little tiny jar, and leave it right at the front of the fridge, you know, close it up, leave it in front of the fridge and use it on the next, on or in your next meal, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like if it's a chopped herb, it will be fine in a salad. The other thing is that I do often. So when it's time to put stuff away, I just swoop it onto the leftover. Last night we had a mala, kind of a Sichuan peppercorn flavored tofu and pork dish with rice. And I had made a chopped cilantro and peanut thing that I sprinkled on top. But again, I kept
not all of it.
Mm-hmm. And then before I put it away, before I put the leftovers away for lunch, I had the volition. I had overcome enough of my anxiety and phobia to just smush the rest of it right in there.
I love that.
That's a really
smart.
Good one because it, you know, you want that, you want the flavor. It's not too much. My third one is kind of more philosophical, but the best way to keep herbs from going bad is fat. And so I, as a sort of like policy, I really, and I think I have written about it in probably, I've written three books, and I think I've written this in all of them, to store your herbs in fat, meaning if you have a leftover chopped herb and you have room temperature butter because you left it out to put on bread during dinner, combine the two, wrap them back up in the butter wrapper, and you have herb butter. And then that will stay good forever. You know, just put it away in the fridge and use it on everything. Just put a little bit of that herb butter on your fish or on your potato or on your tofu or whatever, or just, I mean, maybe easier actually, put the leftover herb in a bowl and cover it with olive oil and add a tiny bit of salt. Now you have a little herb drizzling oil.
Gorgeous.
Which is great.
That's amazing.
And you can use that, or, you know, same thing with yogurt. Yogurt also, you can make a little herbed yogurt.
Gorgeous. Okay, let's bring in our first caller. This is Chloe. Hi, Chloe.
Hi, Greta. I'm so excited to chat with y'all.
How are you doing?
I'm good. It's so fun to hear your voice that I've only heard in a podcast actually speaking to me.
I'm a real human. We're here. So, Chloe, I want to introduce you to Tamar.
Hi, Tamar.
Hi. I am so excited that I get to talk to you about your culinary quandary. I can't even tell you.
I'm very excited too. It's really great to meet you as well.
So, Chloe, can you tell us what your question is?
Yes. So I have been living alone for the past 3 years after previously living with a partner. And I found that living alone, it's been a lot harder to get excited about cooking and finding new recipes and trying new recipes. So I would love any advice or suggestions on how to get excited about cooking again.
It's such a good question. Tamar, what do you think?
Chloe, can I ask you some follow-up questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. My first follow-up question is, when you were living with somebody else, mm-hmm. why did you cook? And did you who were you cooking for? And what did you, do you remember the thought process that led up to your cooking?
Good question.
It's therapy, Chloe. You're welcome.
So I was cooking for me and my husband at the time. It was just the two of us. And I did really enjoy trying new recipes, and I would spend time trying to find new recipes too. And it was, I don't know, cooking kind of brought me joy in a way to do something that was for me and for him. And I think that it's just been hard to find that same satisfaction when it's just for me. Mm.
Do you remember how you, whether you liked getting feedback? Like, did you like the conversation about it, or whether it was actually articulated or just kind of like, you know, eye contact, or, you know, did you like sort of reflecting on the meal?
I did. And I liked kind of noting the meal and making it again and chatting about it and how I made it and things like that.
That makes sense. And do you, how do you feel about having people over and cooking for other people?
I hardly ever do that, but the idea of it is appealing.
I ask that because I noticed in myself a serious dip in my caring about cooking and love of cooking during the pandemic, as you know, a lot of people did. Although I think for some people, having all of the time ended up, you know, giving them a kind of like net increase in cooking interest. During the pandemic, I realized how much I rely on cooking for other people and how much I love, how much of cooking is feeding for me, more than I thought. And I wonder how you would feel about, I'm not talking about like not even big dinner parties, but how you would feel about starting to just invite people over, because there is nothing that people like more than being cooked for. And it could be, it wouldn't have to be like six people, but how would it feel to invite people over sometimes?
I love that idea. My favorite way to gather with my friends is doing something really casual at each other's house. So I think that would be a really great way of incorporating excitement about cooking again into that.
Another thing I wonder about is cooking the same thing as a friend without even having to be together. If you happen to have a friend who's somewhere else and you find something that for a minute, let's say you're, you know, looking through wherever it is that you sometimes look through for pretty pictures of food and inspiration. and you see something that like for a moment inspires, and then you think like, yeah, but then it's just me sitting at the table. If it were a project that you did with a friend, if that would feel, if that would have a different sort of resonance because it had a larger audience.
Absolutely. That actually makes a lot of sense to me. And kind of the way that I got into looking at pretty pictures online, as you described, was with a friend in grad school, and we would kind of do exactly what you're talking about. But I realized I haven't done that in a long time, so that's a really good idea.
Oh, neat.
I think it's really fun to have some like recipe buddies on hand who you can text, you know, like, holy shit, I just made this. It was delicious. Even if you don't make the same thing at the same time, just to have people who like you could text as you are eating the bite, even if you're on your own,
yeah,
to just be like, dude, this is amazing. It can be really satisfying, I think.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
I also, I'm wading into dangerous waters. And I wish I didn't feel compelled to do this all the time, but I do. But so there was a meme. I might be using meme wrong. I am 46 years old, but there was a thing about girl dinner,
yes,
like a while ago. And
we talked shit about it on Nerdette, actually.
Oh, okay, good.
But
I
we
missed
love
that episode.
Also.
So the thing about that is that there have been so many really, really wonderful different sort of cultural models for gathering things that you want to eat and eating them, that there was something about the, even though it's kind of tongue in cheek, something about the phrase girl dinner that really pissed me off because I wrote a piece about this in the Times magazine a bunch of years ago, but just about how wonderful it can be to gather a meal for yourself and like where what you're doing is assembling more than anything else, because it's so wonderful to just to do as much, to put as much time as you would put into cooking into the procuring of stuff or like like provisioning. I think I like provisioning as much as I like cooking. And when you think like, oh, I don't have to, nobody's going to be, you know, testing the temperature of my meal. I can literally have this one beautiful orange and like a quarter of this, you know, beautiful soft wheel of cheese and these crackers. I don't love the name girl dinner. And so I love that as like an elevated meal for one person. Mm-hmm. When I broke up with my boyfriend of a long time, I remember half enjoying, in like my better moments, half enjoying the opportunity to like go and get a quarter of a wheel of really, really nice cheese. You know, wheat cheese that cost $40 a pound, and a half a bottle of really good wine that still cost $20, which meant that the whole bottle would have been 40, but it was just me. And, you know, sort of like doing that sort of really fancy provisioning occasionally, and then setting, you know, and having it mostly be like scene and setting, and then some wonderful things that I didn't spend a ton of time cooking, but I did spend a little bit of time arranging and assembling.
Yeah, I really love that idea, because I think sometimes it feels like girl dinner is sad girl dinner when it doesn't need to be sad girl dinner.
No, it's badass girl dinner.
Yeah.
So I really like the idea of being intentional about gathering nice things for your girl dinner rather than thinking of it as just grabbing whatever you have in the fridge that's available to you. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Like total, like the opposite, you know, the kind of stuff that what I always think about is like the stuff that I couldn't buy if I were serving more people. Those are the things that make it into a meal just for me.
That's nice.
Really lovely. I like that a lot. I think too, I mean, I cooked for myself for many, many years all through the pandemic. And I think something that I always appreciated about it is that I felt like cooking a meal for myself was like a gift I could give myself, which I don't know if that framing resonates with you at all, Chloe, but I feel like you can treat yourself to something really lovely, you know? And I totally get the pleasure of like watching a loved one eat something that you made and seeing their pleasure in it. But like you can give yourself that anytime, you know? And that's really beautiful too, I think.
Yes, I love that too. That's a great way of thinking about it.
You know, it's tourist season. Like, fucking treat yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, I've been thinking about romancing yourself since you all talked about that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like, cook yourself a fancy fucking meal, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Just keep indulging. You're doing great.
Yes.
Thank you both. This was wonderful.
Thank you, Thank Chloe. You. This was really lovely. I'm really glad we got to do it. What a treat.
Yes.
I want to know how it goes.
Yes. Like, all right. I will keep you posted.
Thanks, Chloe. Okay. Take care.
Thank you both so much. Take care.
Bye.
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 Well, that was fucking lovely.
I love that. See, that's why this is my dream. I want to do this all day.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we will get to more callers in just a minute. So, Tamar, we got a voice memo from Julia asking about reheating a very specific sort of leftovers for her and her wife. I love this. Let's listen.
I often make chicken breast schnitzel for the two of us that live in our house. And I'm constantly trying to figure out how to batch cook everything at once so that I don't have to set up the breadcrumbs and the egg wash and all of that and fry it to start with, and then do it again with the remainder of the raw chicken the next day. So I've tried frying everything so that it's par cooked and then baking off the next day to finish cooking. It turns out rubbery. I've tried fully batch cooking 1.5 pounds of chicken breast as schnitzel and then just baking to reheat the next day, and that turns out soggy. Is there a way that I can be a little more efficient and economical with my time and resources to be able to batch cook or batch prep everything so that turns out fresh and crispy 2 nights in a row?
I love that Julia and her wife get to eat fried chicken cutlets multiple times in a week.
I know. So, I love that that's the quandary here. It's beautiful.
Like, that's fantastic. Knowing that, like, if I come to Julia's house any day, the odds are very good that they're just going to be like, here, have a fried chicken cutlet, which is, I think we can all agree, one of the best foods.
Delicious.
Right? Like, that's,
yeah.
That's great. And it's my son's favorite food. So I definitely feel the, like, is there a easier way to do this? And I love that they're seeking it so that they can uphold their fried chicken cutlet more than once a week habit.
Same. Which,
yes. Good. Keep doing that. I kind of want Chloe back on to say, like, and just, like, make yourself fried.
Just fry chicken all the time.
Chicken every day. It's great. You're never unhappy eating a fried chicken cutlet. You know, you're not like, oh, no, I wish it was something else. No, you're like, oh,
this is perfect.
This is perfect. It is. It really is. I think good news and bad news. The good news is that I think that Julia nailed it with the second part of her question. Is there a way to do to kind of organize the breading moment more efficiently?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is. And that is, I think, the place to focus one's energy. You're never gonna, it's never, especially if you're a fried chicken cutlet connoisseur, which Julia clearly
sounds
is,
like
you would be, you know, it's not, you're not going to get what you want out of reheating it. You know, a couple of things. One is you could and would get good results if you, went ahead and did flour, egg, breadcrumb for the ones for tonight, and then did flour, egg, breadcrumb for a couple of them for tomorrow. And then just fried them from breaded tomorrow.
Let them sit like that in the fridge.
In the fridge, uncovered.
That's amazing.
But you might, if you were doing that, you would probably, when you take them out, want to give them like one final little dusting of breadcrumbs, because some of the breadcrumbs will get kind of, you know, softer. And the other recommendation that I would make is if you don't eat it all with the splitting it between those 2 days, is to store the breadcrumbs and egg that you use in little containers. So like I think one of the issues is that you put flour into one plate, breadcrumbs into one plate, egg into one plate. You do it for the two or three that you want tonight, but then you're like, but now I have like chickeny mm-hmm. chickeny stuff for breading. And so yep. I would say if you know you're going to do it again, let's say you did, and now I'm assuming that Julia and her wife eat fried chicken every day. So on day two, you fry the stuff that you breaded on day one. Day three, take out the raw unbreaded chicken and you've stored your leftover breading materials in little containers that you call very clearly like chickeny breadcrumbs, chickeny, you know, because you're, and then,
right.
then you do take them out again, but you don't have to, you're not going through like taking out the whole bag of flour, the whole thing of breadcrumbs. You've stored them in the fridge, definitely in the fridge because, you know, they've touched chicken or whatever, but it's your chicken yes. that's in your house and you're just doing it one day later on the same batch of chicken. You're good to go.
That's a good idea.
I also want to put in a bid for how great just leftover, not crispy chicken cutlets or schnitzel is when you are expecting them to be that. I love like cold fried chicken salad. I have a really good recipe for it in the Everlasting Meal Cookbook, where it's a green salad, like a crispy green, like little gems, and a creamy herby dressing, and cut up cold chicken and there can be something really pleasant about like a cold, slightly no longer crispy coating if it's what you're expecting.
That's smart. That's really smart. How much do you think like using a oh my gosh, what are they even called? Like a, you know, the like a cooling rack that you would put cookies on, using something like that in the oven for a reheat so that you can get some air on all sides of it to help with the crisping of a reheat?
Totally. Yeah. That's a great idea. But like a one with a pretty wide mesh.
Oh, good. We solved it.
We solved
it. So many ways.
Oh my gosh. I want the whole menus that go with the daily chicken cutlets. It's so good.
I love that the main thing is like, okay, so we have a lot of follow-up questions for everyone, turns out. Okay, it is time for our next caller. This is Bree. Hey, Bree.
Hello. Sorry, I have the cheesiest picture. This is my work computer.
It's very professional.
I know. I don't know how to take it off.
No, if I had a picture that looked that professional, I would have it up all the time.
Yeah, it's like, goddamn. Yeah. So will you tell us what your question is?
Yeah. So my question was, how do I prepare healthy meals that I actually want to eat? I can prepare healthy meals. I just don't actually want to eat them.
I love the actually in there. I feel actually. Like that says a lot.
Can I ask you some follow-up questions?
Sure.
Okay. My first follow-up question is, what do you mean by healthy?
Well, that's a great question because I feel like I don't know what healthy is anymore. Mm. You know, as I've gotten older, I feel like all of the nutrition advice that I read is about having high amounts of protein at every meal. And I don't really cook meat very well, especially like lower fat, healthy meats or like chicken and things like that. So I'm usually at a loss to find meals that have a lot of protein and, you know, more healthy carbs and vegetables.
And what do you love eating?
Is it cheese?
Cheese is definitely on the list. Mm-hmm. I was trying to decide, do I say pizza or pasta first?
Pizza is so good.
But I can prepare pasta, different sauces for pasta, all of that kind of stuff. But when it comes to adding the protein in, that's where I struggle.
Okay. And how do you feel about vegetables?
I like when other people cook them for me. Mm-hmm. So I do like vegetables. I guess I don't know how to chop them and I don't know how to cook them.
Okay. Hmm. This is lots of good information.
I love this.
Yeah. I also, Greta, I feel like I want to hear you were having a lot of responses and I would like to hear what they were, not just the cheese thing. You clearly like cheese.
Well, cheese is the best. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess one of my first thoughts is like, there is no right way to chop a vegetable. And I wonder if it would be helpful to just think of like, you should cut it in whatever way it's a shape that you would want to put in your mouth. You know, like as long as they're good bites, I think that's all that really matters when it comes to actually cutting up a vegetable. And the protein thing is really interesting. When I do, like, do you like eggs? Like, I wonder if you should just be putting eggs on everything. Like, an egg and pasta is fucking delicious.
Yeah, I mean, I like eggs sometimes. I go, you know, I go in and out of favor with certain foods. The other thing is I'll get into these patterns where I'll have the same meal for a while and then never want it again.
Yeah. Okay. I want to commend you for saying I want, there's got to be a way to both enjoy this and to do it right. And I guess the thing that I want to start by saying, even though it's a cliche, is in eating, even more vitally than in all the other parts of our lives, the perfect is the enemy of the good. And I think so often what happens is that in an attempt to do it right or to do it better, we end up really not wanting to do it at all, or it being costly, emotionally costly, or you know, financially costly, or painful, or just taking too much willpower. And so I think my first piece of advice would be to put down the advice. Most people in the global north eat more than enough protein. You do not, unless your blood work shows something that I don't know about, which is totally possible, you don't need to worry about it. We get protein in so many places and so many ways. And that, you know, protein is filling, certainly, but so are other things. Fat is filling too, and we increasingly know that fat's good for us. So I would encourage you to look at the fact that an effort to get protein into the middle of everything is making you unhappy and making you not want to cook, and tell it to just go screw itself and not worry about that. That's not that it is so much more healthy to eat food that you make from whole ingredients than it is to do any other kind of special eating that if all you did was eat food you made yourself, you would be eating healthy. I'm saying that to the not including highly processed foods, but there's so much data showing that just eating any whole foods at all in any combination to your taste is so much better for you than any other version of any diet, that you really you shouldn't feel shackled to advice to do things the best way you possibly can when that advice is keeping you out of the kitchen. Yeah, like I hate, you know, forcing myself to do things I don't want to do. And I think that that can happen a lot in nutrition. Like I see people try to eat vegetables all the time, more vegetables. And because there's all this advice not to have too much salt and all this advice not to have too much fat, they're eating. Oh, and also that if you cook something too long, it will get rid of some of the nutrients. So then people are trying to get themselves to eat under-seasoned, undercooked, under-oiled vegetables, which is gross.
Well, everything you said resonates so much with me, but I will often skip the salad because I feel like, well, it's just a vehicle for fatty, high caloric salad dressing, which I need to eat the salad. And if I just, you know, stop thinking in that way, I can have a salad that I enjoy and that gets those, you know, nutrients from those greens without it being such a big deal.
Yeah. And like, I love a super creamy dressing. Like one of my favorite things is when you have an empty or an almost empty mayonnaise jar, and then there's like a little bit of mayonnaise still in there. You just make whatever vinaigrette you were going to make anyway in that jar, and then you shake it and it gets like mayonnaise-y.
So nice.
I think that we are doing ourselves often such a disservice by trying to do it all right. You're like, oh, I'm supposed to be eating, you know, less saturated fats. And so then I'm not going to have the salad because what I really want is blue cheese dressing or Caesar dressing. And I just think, no, total opposite. Who cares about the perfect? Absolutely have the like, yeah, high calorie is fine. You know, like, again, it's better if you can make it than if you get it made. Most of the time, just because you don't, if you're making something yourself, it can be most of the same ingredients, but you don't have to add sugar, which is a preservative, or corn products, which preserve it. You know, things that just make it last on a shelf. That's the stuff that's actually not good for you, not the calories or the fat. And, you know, also, if you're making it with, there are plenty of dairy products that are in really creamy dressings that have protein in them. So like there, that's how you get your protein. I really wouldn't, you know, from your picture, it looks like you are a healthy, beautiful person living probably in the global north. And I would just not worry about any of those things. I really do think it's important, and they're finding again and again that it's important to like eat mostly whole foods and eat a lot of plant foods. And I have found that the best way to do that is to make my plant foods really delicious. And that always involves, I'm trying to think of, I mean, sometimes like there are these little carrots at my farmer's market, which you just, they're only around for like 3 weeks and they're like sugar sweet. So you just want to eat them like that. But a lot of the other times, what I really love with vegetables is cooking them to totally tender, having them be well salted, nicely fatty. Often, I mean, God, like what's better than roasted, like really oily, salty roasted broccoli with like cheese grated on it? Or, you know, like a sandwich of mozzarella or ricotta and like oily cooked greens. That's how you get yourself, that's how you have a healthy diet, is by taking the advice and making it delicious.
Yeah, that's so helpful.
I love that. So yeah, Brie, is that like, are you excited? Are there things you're thinking about now where you're like, oh shit, okay, I can give myself permission to like actually enjoy these things?
Yeah, I'm actually excited to try some recipes because I feel like now I don't have to try to skimp on the oil or salt or, you know, any of those other flavors. For instance, I have some cauliflower that I was going to roast, but I didn't want to throw it in too much olive oil, but that's the only way it's good.
Put it in olive oil.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this just gave me that flexibility to relax and not try to make it perfect. And I know that that's been stopping me from trying to make my own food because I can't make it uber healthy and have it taste good.
Yeah, no, you gotta just make it taste good and then it'll be the rest will follow. I'm so glad that you put it like that and that you have that cauliflower ready to receive all the olive oil and salt it needs.
It's going to soak it up so beautifully. Yes. It's going to be delicious.
A little mustard and vinegar sauce along it. Like,
see, yeah, you got it. There you go. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I love the question and I'm glad we got to talk about it. Tamar, the giving yourself permission to be like, no, I'm just going to eat this thing. I'm going to make it delicious and it's going to be delicious. It's so lovely.
Good. Yeah. Well, will you follow up and let us know how it goes?
Absolutely.
Yay. Well, thank you, Brie. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. So our last question comes from Liz Botnitz on Instagram, and they wanted to know the top 3 to 4 oils they should have in their kitchen at all times and why, which I love. And I have a feeling you're going to like that one too.
Yeah, I do. It's also an interesting question. I feel like it's a question that could only be asked right now in the US or like right now in a, you know, an industrialized, globalized country. Because most of the time we've just had, like, humans have just had like the fat that their culture cooked in.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's an interesting sort of like timestamp, that question. And I want to ask follow-up questions, of course, because what I want to ask Liz, what kind of foods they make, because that holds most of the answer.
That makes sense.
The food that you make has an oil that it is normally cooked in. And, you know, you could do fine with just that one oil. I cook a lot of Mediterranean food. I use tons of olive oil. I buy it by the 3-liter container, and I use them really fast, like really, really fast. And I use
that amazing
for everything. But I also keep a frying oil around because I really love frying. So a frying oil has a higher smoke point. Italians and people who cook in Italy will say that they just do everything in extra virgin olive oil. And I know that that is true. You can also just have extra virgin olive oil and you can fry in it. In Italy, they're not like, they're not filling their pots with peanut oil to drown their zucchini flour stuff with ricotta. That's olive oil, you know? So that's fine. I tend to try to have a peanut oil, or I really like rice bran oil for frying, which tends to be less expensive, or peanut oil. But oil goes badly pretty quickly. And I would not recommend keeping a lot of oils around. They will go rancid.
That makes sense.
I would say the oil that is used in the culture from which you draw your inspiration most often is one I would keep. And then if you like frying things as much as I do, a high smoke point. Better to make it make sense or make it work with what you have than have the perfect thing to make it.
Well, Tamar, thank you so much. I wish we could just do this all the time.
I want to do it all the time. Well, if there's ever another moment at which Nerdette listeners want to send in advice, I'm here. I'm just going to be sitting at this microphone essentially until you call me next.
Okay, great.
Just sitting here thinking about culinary advice I can give.
Well, we'd love to have you back. So just, stay there. We'll be there back soon.
Great. I'll be here.
All right, that's it for this week. Thank you, Chloe, Bree, Kathleen, Julia, Liz, and everyone else who sent in questions. They were perfect, and y'all are the best. Speaking of sending things in, our last episode with WBEZ is going to be on May 28th. So if you would like to send us a little goodbye for now message, we would love to hear from you before then. Just record yourself on your smartphone and then email that file to nerdettepodcast@gmail.com. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman at WBEZ in Chicago and is part of the NPR network. And our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. We will see you next week.
This is, you know that I'm living out my dream right now. This is it. This is as good as it gets for me.